That bike's been designed just for me. It's too much for a kid like you. Okay, let's ride.
Oh, no. Oh, there I am.
That was really weird. You went from zero to nothing. You disappeared.
Yeah. That was weird. That was really weird.
But you're back. Hey, and welcome back, all the listeners.
Yep. Welcome to Movie Boners, everybody. Cheers.
Cheers to you. What beer are you drinking today?
It has nothing to do with the movie we watched.
Yeah.
My daughter picked it out because of the name. Okay. I'm laughing because you're wearing a Macho Man shirt.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm drinking Steve Austin's Broken Skull IPA.
Nice. I've always wanted to try it. I don't think I've ever seen it, but I've seen the can. I know it exists, yeah, obviously. Yeah. He drinks it and posts about it a lot. But that's
yeah, funny. My daughter was like, Dad, it's Halloween season. It says Broken Skull.
Yeah.
And then I laughed when you sat down with Macho Man. So, my God. We're back to the wrestling references.
I'm very excited. It'll have to be Japanese wrestling, but that's fine. My beer today is, I wanted to find a Japanese beer. I know that they exist, but I was short on time and had to go to our local smaller beer store. So I got this one called Hazer Tag. I believe I've had it on here before.
Oh, there you go.
It's new.
I don't think you've had that one on here.
Haven't I? Maybe I've just bought it in my normal life.
Maybe.
It's a new Odell's Brewing Company.
All right.
Yeah, it's a hazy IPA. It is quite good. And there are lasers in the movie. So I was like, hey, that's close enough.
There's a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, Broken Skull is pretty good. I think you would get a big kick out of it, man.
I would.
It's pretty good.
I like it.
Pretty good.
So our beer is brought to you by Wandering Lion Studios. And I don't know if you can hear that. There's a
Blue Angels. I did hear that. Yeah,
They've had Blue Angels flying over all week because there's an air show going on and they've been practicing and stuff. So you may hear jets in the background. Not because I'm in Neo Tokyo. It's just,
in 2019.
Yeah, I'm in the past now. But our beer is brought to you by Wandering Lion Studios. They are a sponsor. They are cool guys. Did you go check them out, wanderinglionstudios.biz. Did you read their email last time that I missed before we recorded last time? There's a really cool thing that they said that they're about going to release very soon, actually. I think in a couple of days. Actually, the day that this drops, they said that they're planning on releasing a new short film. And the coolest part that I thought is that they said, well, here's the thing. It's an quote unquote artsy take on a situational comedy, highlighting the absurd, eccentric, and often flawed side of the young artist's attempt to make art. But the cool thing is that they said that they used inspiration from things that we've talked about or ways that we've talked about movies like Bronson, Birdman, and our Wes Anderson episode, mm-hmm. which is a very interesting combination of things, Bronson, Birdman, and Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really cool because I don't think I've ever inspired anyone to do anything before. And I didn't anticipate that being what this podcast did, but it's cool that artists are taking this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man.
That's awesome. So yeah, we'll be posting about that, I'm sure, when it comes out. They said they were going to release a teaser soon. So
yeah,
as soon as that's out, we'll let you know. That's very exciting. Go check out wanderinglionstudios.biz and check out the other things they do. They're cool guys. And they're on Instagram. They're on Facebook. Check them out.
I was trying to find that email because I was like, I'm pretty positive I read it and I just found it. Which is irrelevant at this moment. Yeah, anyways, moving on.
I read everything that was worth talking about.
I think you hit it all. Good job. Good job.
Yeah. And so I guess the other tie-in for this episode to Wandering Lions is they had a film festival last year. Which
was awesome.
We got to talk to several different filmmakers. One of those filmmakers we've had some conversations with on Instagram. They've DM'd us and the guy who recommended we see Akira. I've never seen it. You have never seen it, but we had it heartily recommended to us.
Yeah.
As something that they would be interested hearing us talk about, which I could see why.
And we had people after we announced that we were going to do Akira commenting and being like, can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about it.
Oh my God. It's my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't know about you. I felt a little bit of pressure all of a sudden because I was like, man.
Yeah. Oh no. Like, people care about this.
I was like, what if I don't like it? It was
like, yeah. Tune in while Dustin shits all over it.
I was like, all right. Because I waited to watch it because I wanted it as fresh as possible before we recorded. So, yeah, I was seeing like the excitement for it. And then I was like, all right, I think it's time to buckle down and watch it. So.
Yeah, I also waited to watch it, partly because I would like to have it fresh. I tend to try to watch things twice when we have just one movie to watch. I couldn't, and part of the reason I was delayed in watching it is because I didn't have time. My wife was forcing me to watch Midnight Mass every time that we had TV time.
As you should. By the way, watch Midnight Mass.
Finally finished it. It's slow to start. You have to stick with it. We started it over and well worth it. Very interesting.
Yeah, I was like, what is going on by the third episode? Like, what is this? And then all of a sudden, like, oh.
Yeah.
But that's for a different discussion. But it go is. Watch Midnight Mass. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, Akira, I know that I have been verbally abusive is might be a decent way to say it against anime in the past. Yep. I don't tend to care for it. I haven't been exposed to it. So this is the first anime feature film I've ever watched. I've seen a little bit of Pokemon, a little bit of Dragon Ball Z. I tend to be someone who is very picky about art styles, and in movies and shows and comics also, there are a lot of, I love Batman. I love all of this, the great Batman stories, but there are a lot of black Batman comics that I don't care for because I don't gravitate to the art style. Like,
right.
And we've talked about before Batman Returns for sure. But like Nightfall, all of those ones, I'm like, it's not my style. It's not what I would prefer. And anime is kind of mostly that for me. But I was surprised by Akira because I was very impressed by the animation, especially for late 80s animation. But I had back and forth because there is some of the very anime type things. I really liked the backgrounds and the effects, but the character models were like not what I would prefer. So I mixed, I guess.
Right. I've been that way too. When I was younger, I watched Pokemon when it first came out, but I got out of my Pokemon fan phase fairly quick. And then I never bothered with Dragon Ball Z. You're not going to convince me to watch it, guys. Don't try. I never cared to watch. I can't even think of all the other ones. I've never been an anime fan ever. Yeah. Just never cared for it. My daughter is a huge anime fan. So I have watched a few anime films and a couple anime shows with her. And watching them with her, I'm not as critical as I've always been to anime, but I'm still not a big fan.
Yeah.
And it boils down to like, sometimes the animation, I'm like, okay. Sometimes it's how they tell their stories. I don't care for the style and the pacing that they choose to do usually.
Yeah.
Which is weird because then I'll like watch movies that are crazy slow or have real messed up pacing and I'm all for it. So I don't want to say that's why I'm not a big anime fan.
Yeah.
But the over dramatized freakouts that every character always has.
There's a lot of yelling in normal conversation.
That I think that ends up being part of why I'm like not a big fan, because someone's always shouting and you're always, at least I'm always like, ugh. But going into Akira for me was, I felt a little pressure, but at the same time, I was kind of like, I watched it with an open mind. I did. Yeah. I promise. I'll save for how I actually felt about it once we really dive into it. But Akira had some parts in it that I was like, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of it was, how did we end up here?
Yeah. Yeah. What is going on? Yeah. So do you want to get into it?
Let's do this.
Get into Akira. So we're going to give spoilers, obviously. If you wanted to watch this movie from 1988 and haven't yet, go watch it. I don't know that we could adequately spoil it for you, but we will say things that you'll be like, what the fuck are they talking about? So go watch Akira before you listen to the rest of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Akira's interesting. I noticed that it opens on a shot on July 16th, 1988, which happens to be the day the movie was released in Japan, at least. So that was interesting. And you see what looks like a nuclear bomb going off and in the city of Tokyo. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then it jumps to, because it was in 88. And so I was like, they're bombing Tokyo again. It was just kind of weird. And then it jumps to 2019, 31 years after World War III, in Neo Tokyo. So they've rebuilt Tokyo, and I was interested at this point, where I was like, this is weird that Tokyo is presuming there's another world war, that, or I'm assuming as a viewer, World War III has happened. We saw a giant nuclear bomb go off. There was another world war. Japan got bombed by a nuke again. This is like, this sucks for sure. So I was like, this is just kind of interesting and weird.
I will say that opening shot with the explosion, I was like, oh, this should be interesting. Mm-hmm. It was like, all right, what a way to kick it off. And then it was a biker gang rivalry.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait. What?
Yeah, so we dropped in Neo Tokyo.
Ouch.
There's like biker gangs. One is like a clown themed one. There's our main group of protagonists are in another one. And what the only thing I knew about Akira was the bike. Like this one guy's, the one guy's big red bike. It's in the cover. That's all I know about it.
It's the cover. Watching it, I was like, man, I know I've like seen this clip of him stopping the bike, but like going away from the camera with that, that kind of shot. Mm-hmm. And then when I was reading the notes, I was like, oh, that's why, because like every animated show was inspired to have scenes like that, if not identical to it in all of their stuff. And I was like, all right, that makes sense. That's why it felt so familiar. So I give it credit. That's kind of funny that shot of him stopping the bike like that became so like staple.
Yeah.
For animated shows and movies.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's certainly true. I read that Akira was the highest budget anime up until that point. So they definitely put a lot into it. I've also heard a lot of Western media has been inspired by it since. So there's a lot of different things going on. I thought that there was a significant Blade Runner vibe to the city, like the backgrounds and stuff.
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
And so that like 80s neo punk kind of look and feel. There's like a in the biker bar, they have like 80s American music, like The Doors and Cream and all this like American rock. But yeah, the bike shots. First of all, I thought that the red bike would be much more important than it is, but moving past that, I also thought that the main character's name was Akira until I actually saw the movie, so I was a little confused at first.
Yep, right there with you. I don't know about you, but when I put it on, I didn't read the synopsis. I didn't, like, I went into it as blind as possible so that I didn't have any, like, lingering expectations or kind of, oh, I know what they're gonna do. Wow, I had no clue where that movie was going.
Yeah, may have helped to have some idea of what was going on. But I do like the bike effects. So folk, I see one of the recommendations we got from our listener was watch it on the as big of a screen as you can. And I do understand where he was coming from, because the imagery and especially the backgrounds and the details of these effects were really, really good. And one of the cool ones was the bike taillights as they like drive off.
Yeah.
And they like kind of linger, the light kind of lingers. It was impressive. I thought it was really cool. I don't know that I've seen anything like that too much.
The scope of it was, I have a lot of respect for the scope of that, because it was so big. And it seemed like throughout the course of the film, to me, I was like, man, it feels like everything's getting bigger. Like everything's just expanding and expanding and expanding.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a spoiler by itself, but the scope of it, because when I got your text about, oh, by the way, don't, you know, he wants us to watch it on the biggest screen we can. And I was like, all right, like it's an anime, how, you know, whatever. And I get it after watching it. I was like, halfway through, I'm going with all the backdrops of the city and just like, especially when it really gets nuts towards the end. I was like, okay, I get why you want to watch it on a big screen. Yeah. I did kind of find myself wondering, you know how like some of the theaters will do, oh man, what is that called? I forget like, what they call the like Fandango those, like, thing or whatever, the special screenings.
Like throwback kind of movies.
Yeah, I feel like Akira would be a good one to have for that.
Yeah,
because of that scale.
Yeah,
I think that would be kind of interesting to watch on a big screen just for to sure. get the full spectrum of it.
Yeah, but I would totally agree with that. I've seen them do things with like Spirited Away is the only other one I can think of.
Yeah,
it's like an anime that I've never seen, but heard about. So the interesting thing about Akira to me, I was interested in
just one interesting thing. That movie is full of what?
Well, there's a lot of interesting things that are like, what? But the interesting thing to me that I was like, oh, this might be right up my alley. It was the fact that there's a kind of a complicated story about they kind of tease things out in the background, which I like. I love when stories tell the story through the world, like the news that's on, or they're talking about like, oh, there's this, you know, student protests that are turning violent, or the government is doing these weird things, or the military and the police are working together to put down like this revolution. I was like, this is interesting. I'm definitely interested in like this story about these individuals that live in this world, and their story about this biker gang and friends who are kind of friends. There's, I have a tumultuous relationship. Their story is very different than, at least initially, very different than the world that they are living in. They're not really involved in student protests or anti-government things that are happening, but it's important because it sets up where the story is going.
I don't know about you, but there were a few moments during Akira, where I got a huge sense of like, am I really this disconnected from other cultures, especially like, cause they're like the biker gang, but their punishment is they have to continue to go to school. They have to continue their education and like the way the education system is set up in the different, areas of the city and all that. I felt like very much kind of being impacted by my own
isolation,
ignorance, isolation, whatever you want to call it, to like that's so weird to me that this is I'm assuming this is actually a part of their culture, like making sure young adults even are still continuing education, still continuing schooling, even if it's like punishment or their outside lives, just the way that they like kind of go about their days and all that. I know it's an anime and it's a fantasy anime, but at the same time, like, it's Japanese, so obviously there's a lot of their actual culture integrated into it. So I've had several moments watching Akira where I felt just like, I feel like there's a disconnect here. Not in like a, I'm getting turned off from it, but it was just like a, that disconnect of like, oh, I just, this is such a different mentality, a different culture that I just, I don't know, stupidly don't know enough about or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. There's a lot of like small contextual background things in any movie that we're just like, oh, I understand this, like you, typical stereotypical American high schoolers going to school and getting into trouble and all this stuff. We're like, yeah. I get that because I've been there. But you see Japanese students who get into trouble and they handle it very differently in public schools. Relationship to the government is very different. And so, yeah, it just kind of is like, oh, that's interesting or different. Not what right. I would expect. Like,
huh, well, that's different.
Yeah.
There was a lot. There were a few times where I like would rewind it, kind of go back a couple scenes or go back a little bit just to make sure I caught something that I thought I heard or thought I saw.
Yeah.
It was very, there was a lot of moments where I felt like, and I got warned, or I shouldn't say warned. I had a coworker when I told him, like, yeah, we're going to watch Akira. Neither of us have watched it. I think we both just kind of heard about it.
Yeah.
And he was going off on how amazing it is, which I've heard from so many people.
Yeah.
When you bring this up. And he told me, he goes, man, it might be the most detailed anime I've ever seen. And I was like, well, what does that mean? He goes, you'll get it. It's like, okay. Watching it, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
He wasn't kidding. There is so much tiny detail.
Yeah.
When they really, you brought up like the animation for the backdrops for the city, when they really go into it, and it's like, whoa. Yeah. Like, there is a lot going on, whether it's just all the little cracks in buildings or whatnot, but also, like you just mentioned, some of the story getting set up in the background very subtly, very quickly.
They don't really draw attention to it. It can be very quick. And I did notice, I backed it up a few times and I was like, oh, I didn't notice that before. That
yeah.
They don't really draw attention to it. They just kind of, they show it and there may be no sound. They just don't draw attention to it, but it's still intentional and purposeful and important.
Yeah. 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 And the movie, I don't know about you, man, but I spent most of the movie just like, where is the story going? What is actually happening? And then the freaking psychic children showed up and I was like, all right. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah. There's not a lot going on up until the point where you see this hideously grotesque mutant child thing. And I was like, is it a kid? Is it a monster? Is that like, is that a cultural thing I should know about? Or is it just like, cause it looked to me like a ghoul kind of.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they have like these strange superpowers and there seems to be a couple of them. And then I started learning Akira is like a thing that people are talking about. And there's not really any definition to it early on. Some people are treating it like a religious deity or a relic. Some government agents are treating it like a system or a machine, maybe.
Yeah, kind of like a something that they can weaponize, control, try and, and regain or whatnot. Yeah, because I was like you. I thought Akira was the name of the main character, and then it's not.
Yeah. I had to laugh every time I was taking notes. His name is Kaneda, but my phone kept autocorrecting to Canada, and so I ended up internally calling him Canada, and I was like, Canada's saving the world. Canada's kind of a piece of shit.
I'm not going to lie. There were a few times watching it. So Hulu has it streaming, and they have the Japanese version, but it's all English subtitles.
Okay.
Which that was the version I wanted to watch because I wanted to treat it like watching a foreign language film where I want to watch it in their language.
Right.
Where it's just the subtitles. Because I almost feel, with the exception of like old Jackie Chan films, Mm-hmm. I feel like English dubbed foreign films is kind of, mm-hmm. you lose some of the muster.
Yeah, no, for sure. I agree. I watched the English dub version, and I actually want to go back and watch the Japanese with English text to see how different it is. There were some phrasing things that I was like, that seems like it has to just be a weird translation thing. And I wonder if the text would be different on that.
I lost my train of thought.
You're watching the Hulu, I think, the Japanese
version.
Yeah,
it's gone. It's gone. It's all right. So gone.
We'll just move
fuck
on.
Fuck you, then. Brain. Fuck you.
So the other thing that I really liked about the movie was good gore. So when you see that weird mutant kid, he's being dragged through, before you tell he's a ghoul, you see he's being dragged through the streets by this adult who is kind of running away from, I think, protests, something going on. And the government or military or somebody's kind of chasing him down. And that he ends up shooting some dogs. And I was like, ooh, hate when you shoot dogs. But the blood looked pretty cool. And then that same guy ends up getting gunned down. And the blood, like, effects and color and motion was really cool. And I was like, I'm very interested in this kind of style, I guess.
Yeah. Now, having watched a couple anime films before this one, and anime shows before this one, I will say they are very consistent in animation style, and that includes blood splatter. Okay. They are very consistent with that. So when I saw the dude getting gunned down and the blood, how it sprays and like kind of oozes out of him or sprays out of him, I was already like familiar with that style, and I did find myself watching it and being like, nice. Like that. Okay.
But the weird thing about the ghoul kids, I don't know what you're gonna call them.
They've got like, they have premonitions or something. They reminded me of the precognitive siblings from the movie Minority Report. They reminded me of them.
Yeah.
And I almost want to go back and see, like, were they the inspiration? But then at the same time, like, they weren't, because Minority Report is based on a short story from way back when. I forget the author.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm trying to figure, but this idea of precognitive, kind of telekinesis, psychic power, whatnot. Yeah. I kind of liked it when they showed up, because it was like, it struck that nerdy chord for me.
Yeah.
That, you know, I was like, oh, I can get behind this. Like,
there's something extra, not extraterrestrial, but like supernatural going on, something weird, another element that's beyond a normal story about some biker gang kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was very interesting. And their mental powers, and that one of them is like this little girl, and she can like talk through, in, I guess, inhabit the mind of this other girl. So that one, that the not Akira, but Kaneda, and
his, that's what his, I was saying. Sorry, go ahead. Sorry,
yeah, Kaneda. So Kaneda and his friends, they all kind of get arrested. One of his friends is Tetsuo, and he is. It seems like all these friends kind of met because they were orphans in some school system that may or may not have had parents. They kind of got picked on. And so they kind of have this bond. They're all in a biker gang. They're all not that nice. That was kind of the interesting thing about Kaneda to me, where he was like, oh, this is the hero. He should be like, you know, this nice guy. And then he was like, a dick to this girl, and then he was like standing there while they beat up this other guy and like encouraging it, and I was like, what the fuck, this guy's a piece of shit. But it was interesting, I guess, in the sense that he is the hero overall as we get to the end of it, and he is also friends with this bigger piece of shit, which is Tetsuo, who kind of becomes a government experiment.
He kind of like experiment turned oops, we gave him the powers of a god, deity thing who, oh my god, he's like, I'm getting ahead of myself, but Tetsuo gets wild. Yeah, I thought, I kind of liked the idea that the primary characters, none of them are very, like, good people. They just seem like they're kind of pieces of shit, every one of them, who just get involved in this situation by accident, really. But with Tetsuo, he was kind of already, like, a bit of a piece of shit. Like, he was annoying. He was needy.
Yeah.
He was obsessed with the bike. And I kept thinking, like, is the bike, like, what is with this bike? Yeah, it looks okay, but what? Yeah. The bike serves no purpose, folks. No purpose. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It serves no purpose.
Other than being custom and probably cool to some people, it's, yeah, nothing else really occurs.
The bike was like the Boba Fett of Akira, where you're like, people are obsessed with you, they're huge fans of you,
you don't really do anything,
you do nothing, you do nothing, okay, sorry Boba Fett fans, we're getting crashed, but, spoiler
yeah. But so what were you gonna say about Canada? Did you
remember? Okay, so yeah, with the Japanese version, they pronounced it like they weren't actually saying Canada.
Okay.
But I kept hearing Canada. And so, like you, that's how I came to know the main character. I just, my brain was like, we can't comprehend this because we're apparently dumb.
Yeah.
We're calling him Canada the whole movie.
That's a very, like, that's a very American thing to do. We're like, oh, Canada, close enough. We're just going to go with that.
Yeah, like, I guess that's as much as I can compute. Okay.
It's like, no, it's Canada, Canada. And I'm like, Canada, got it.
Canada, Canada. Yeah, I felt like Joey from Friends when he's learning French. Like, if I phonetically did it, I could probably pull it off. Saying it naturally, fuck that up so bad.
Canada. Canada.
Canada.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay, that's totally fair. So I'm probably going to call him Canada a lot because Canada is a lot of work. Or that's probably not even right. I'm trying to be right, but I'm probably not even close still.
You're so probably making it worse by trying to be right.
Yeah. I was like, I was going to come in and be all purposeful and take it seriously and be like, it's not Akira, it's Akira. Or whatever they say. And I was like, that makes me sound like a douchebag. So I'm not going to do that.
Yep.
It's like, Akira, we get it. We all know what we're talking about.
We're just owning up to how we are, guys. Like,
it is.
We're bad at pronunciations. All right. Get over it.
At least I'm remembering their names. I can barely even do that. But Tetsuo is this guy in their group who kind of gets separated from them in this, their biker gang that kind of gets picked up by the cops or government or whoever. And he gets separated from them, and they all kind of get, the rest of the group, Canada and everybody else, kind of get picked up and questioned by the government, and they end up meeting this girl who he kind of tricks them into letting this girl go. They had also picked up this girl. She's kind of quiet. Canada notices her, and he's like, when they decide to let him and his friends go, he's like, well, she's with us, so you know, you said we're good. And they're like, okay, well, whatever, get out of here. She goes with him.
What's her name? Kai or Kay? Kay. I think it's Kay. I don't know. I'm so sorry, people. If you know how to pronounce it right, we are so sorry. Maybe that should have been our disclaimer up front.
It's K-E-I. K-K.
I think they call her K.
I think so.
I think. I was a little hesitant when she showed up that they were going to go like, oh, here's the love interest. Here's like, they're going to try and have this deep love story.
Yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised and thankful they don't really go into that. She's just kind of there. and they kind of feel like there's a bond, or potentially they could maybe have a romantic relationship, but they never explore it, which I was I was happy about. I felt like that would have been almost too much subplot for this movie, where at this point when she shows up, you're already like, when did we go from biker gangs just not liking each other to like the government trying to do something shady? What is happening here?
Well, yeah, at this point there's a government conspiracy, there's mutant children, there's a guy having visions about Akira and all of these other like telekinetic or psychic voices going on, people in black suits showing up and hauling people away. So there, yeah, there's a lot going on, and to add a like a romantic story on top may have been more confusing. Even to that point, though, I was also not, it made me like Canada less when he was just like, the way that he was quote unquote hitting on this girl or like flirting with her was so weird, where she's not into it at all. And then I was just kind of like, dude, get a hint.
Take a hint, man. So I watched this Thursday morning and I was like, okay, we're going to keep it fresh in our mind. There's so much in this movie that I'm like, what point are we, when did that happen again? Like,
yeah.
So bear with us, folks, or at least me.
I had to pull up like a summary so I didn't forget about it.
Yeah.
The main thing about that girl is she's kind of she's involved with these freedom fighters, or what the government would call terrorists. And so they've like, this, our group of rapscallions that we've been talking about, have kind of like gotten her out of the government's grips, but she's seems to be very much connected with the actual protesters, or
they do
see there is a guy who like pulls out a grenade yells into the sky, so it is a little terroristy, but
they're kind of like trying to either protect or get to Akira first. They're kind of trying to like slow the government down from accomplishing. It's like a race. Who's gonna get Akira first? And I was like, well, this is, what the fuck is going on in this movie? But
and what is Akira?
When they finally started bringing up Akira, I was like, oh, okay. What I miss? That was one of the things that I rewound a little bit, because they start really mentioning Akira a lot. And I rewound it to like, wait, did I miss something in the dialogue? Is there something, you know, in the background? And it doesn't take long before you really start piecing it together of like, oh, it's like this deity thing. That like, okay, we're in a fantastical world of, okay, deities are real, which is pretty standard for anime from all the ones that I've watched.
Spirits and stuff.
Yeah. So I kind of like that idea of like, you got this group of people who are, I guess, believers or followers or extremists trying to slow down the government from getting to this deity first. And I think the group was really just trying to protect Akira, or at least prevent Akira from actually showing up.
I thought that was that was the thing that was a little bit confusing to me, because it seemed like the general public, or at least some members of the general public, this group that knows about Akira, maybe they're kind of culty, they do treat it like a deity, or something that may bring about the apocalypse or something like that. It's a very powerful thing that they are aware of. They all know about it and they talk about it, and it's a thing to be kind of feared, I guess. So it is deity-esque. But at the same time, the government's talking about it and this general's talking about it, and it seems to be like a government program partly, where there's a bunch of different people and these kids have numbers and they may be in the like Akira program or related in some way to Akira. And so it seems like the government knows about it and they already have it or have created it or doing it. So it was like, are they trying to get to it first, or are they they know it's existing and it's coming and you can't stop it. And so it was a little bit weird.
There was a little bit. I feel like maybe multiple viewings would probably help clear a lot of my questions up.
For sure.
Because I only got the chance to watch it the one time. I started off with good intentions, try and keep it as fresh in my mind as I could. Like you, when we do just a single film, I try to watch it at least twice just to like really soak it in, get some notes going. But, you know, we still have to work our normal jobs and
right.
And real life kind of has a tendency to step in and be like, oh, you're trying to do that? That's cute.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was a little lost on some of the story, just trying to piece together a lot. I will say that's probably one of the things I did not care about this movie was it felt super jumbled. It felt like there's just subplot on subplot on subplot. Like, I'm okay with complicated stories. I enjoy complicated stories.
Yeah.
But sometimes you need to make it almost just appear to be complicated, and then in reality, it's fairly simple. I feel like Akira is not part of that.
And it's hard to make something that is complicated and won't have a niche fan base or a super fan base. Certainly super fans like to focus on all those details and dig into it and get it to be more, I don't want to say mainstream because I hate mainstream things, but more.
No, don't lie.
As I hold Macho Man Randy Savage, one of the greatest of all time. but you know what I mean? There's a streak, I think, in a lot of people where you prefer to have that, like, I want to be the first one to find this band. I want to be indie. I want to be like less well-known. So some people definitely gravitate to that niche. A lot of people will look at it or like glance at it, and if it seems hard to get into, skip it. And so there's a balance, I think, between making something complicated and making it accessible, I guess is probably a better way to say it. And so it can be hard to find that balance. I don't know that Akira is on either end of the spectrum. Well, certainly not on the easy access end of the spectrum, but there is a lot of complex things something starts happening and you're like, I don't have any context for this. I don't know. Maybe if I watch more anime, I would, but I don't know what this means or what this visual character style or caricature even would indicate. Some of the characters act in a way, like you said, a lot of like overacting kind of, where there's a lot of there's a caricature stuff that is in the place where I'm like a little bit just out of it, I guess.
Yeah. Yes.
and one of the things that always makes me laugh about anime is like the heavy grunting. There's a lot of grunting and gasping that goes on, which I guess tells the story in a way that people understand, but it's just is weird to me.
It is weird to me. I think you and I are pretty much on the same page when it comes to general thoughts on anime. I think, I mean, I said it earlier, the only reason I've watched some anime is I have a child who she is a big anime fan and only diving more into it. So I'm assuming to support her, I'm definitely going to be like, okay, I guess I'm going to watch some more anime. I guess I'm going to get into this. I'll try to try to catch on to it. And maybe I will. Maybe I won't. I don't know. Yeah. It's been kind of slow going because there's some that I've watched and I'm like, okay.
I do know that there's a Batman anime or a Batman anime style of Batman where he has like a samurai outfit.
Yeah, it just came out a couple years ago. I have not watched it yet. That should tell you something. It's Batman versus Joker, but it's like an anime version. I have not watched it. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But back to Akira.
Yeah. So the weird thing, some of the weird things that kind of happen, which is gets back to your point of what feels weirdly paced. Tetsuo is captured by the government. He was separated from the group of everybody else. He's kind of put into this program where there's this mad scientist who's talking about these pills that he wants to give this kid, and he wants to give him like this certain level and this general or colonel or this main military guy. He's like, well, as long as you don't kill him, or as long as you don't like ruin the system or experiment, we'll do whatever. And so this kid is in a lot of pain. He's like in this hospital room. He's like in this facility run by the government, and he's experiencing like visions and hallucinations, and these weird, like these toys are coming to life.
Okay.
He like grabs them and they disappear, and then they're like massive. And then he's floating in milk, and then there's these like when he like actually attacks them, they disappear, and there's like those weird mutant kids inside.
There's like a giant teddy bear that looks all fucked up. The milk was very that whole sequence. I'm so glad you brought it up. I was about to. That whole sequence, and they do it a couple times, not very far apart from each other. Those were moments that I was like, wait, did I like doze off and miss something super important? Did I like blink too long? What the fuck is going on? Why are there these giant toy teddy bear things destroying the world? Why is he swimming in milk?
I wouldn't miss know it was milk, except he expressly says, milk. This is milk.
Yeah. Yeah. Which that's in the subtitled version too, in the Japanese version. He does call it milk. I was like, I went back, thought I missed a whole bunch of real important things. And I don't know. I could be wrong. Fans of the movie, did I miss something? Did Jake and I completely miss something important there? But I was like, that was a moment where my brain was all, how did we go from biker gang war to this? Like, what did we miss here? Did you not fall asleep? You're awake.
You're kind of like Tetsuo, because you're having this weird hallucination which is also really happening and don't really know what's going on,
right? Like the mutant children are like projecting these images, and then I'm like, well, if they're projecting that, what's the significance of the images? And I'm like, I don't get the significance of the images. I don't get what the fuck am I missing? And I try to think that I'm a pretty intuitive viewer when it comes to watching movies.
You've watched a lot.
I've watched a lot. So if you know, if you've read like the manga or manga, however you pronounce it, if there's more detail about it there, let us know the context of the milk. I'm very confused on the milk.
Yeah. I don't know if it was like, it's just a weird thing. I don't know if it was like his dream. I don't know. It was weird. But they seem like these kids, mutant kids, are behind these hallucinations. They are kind of able to control, not actually control those toys, which it kind of seemed like at first, but make him see that, maybe control his mind in a way.
Yeah, I took it completely as they were projecting these images. They were the ones putting him through this. And then when he comes to it, it's like just, it's his hospital room or his, it's not really a hospital, his laboratory room that they're holding him in.
Yeah.
There was a lot. I was like, what the hell is happening here? I'm looking at screenshots from the movie, just trying to like, oh yeah, I remember that. That was an odd part.
One of the things that it was said to us is, if you like the movie Chronicle, which is very, after I had seen Akira, I was like, oh yeah, okay, now I kind of see where you're coming from. This is definitely a lot like Chronicle in the sense that there's a kid who ends up getting a lot of superpowers and kind of using them for evil. So there's a overlap there.
I never watched Chronicle. Never saw it. Yeah, never saw it.
It's pretty interesting if you like superheroes and supervillains in an interesting way.
Well, I do like superheroes and supervillains. But yeah, I just never, that's the handy cam, right? Right?
Yeah.
The handheld camera.
And there's this guy who kind of gets superpowers and ends up kind of using them for evil, from what I remember. And so there is a lot of overlap with Tetsuo, who starts to, after he has those visions with the kids, realizes he's able to kind of do things with his mind. He has these psychic abilities, and he starts to kind of break out of that facility or his prison, his room. And meanwhile, his friend Canada and that girl Kay, they're kind of with this freedom fighter group trying to infiltrate the facility and getting found out. And so when they finally meet up, Canada's like, "Oh, I'm here to save you, Tetsuo." And Tetsuo's like, "I don't need saving. I'm a superhero. Like, I can destroy all this shit that I want." And so he kind of gets very quickly drunk with power or mad with power.
He becomes corrupted real fast, which I actually like. He goes from being very fearful to very corrupted, which I feel is as a comic book fan, I understood that decision in the storytelling and the writing more than a few of the other points in the film. But I got that immediately because I've seen some of my favorite characters have that kind of happen to them. I like the idea when characters are put through so much fear and they're like stripped of everything else, that it's just fear of the unknown of what's happening to them. And then when they give some kind of power, whether it's supernatural or not, they end up utilizing it for evil. They immediately go the wrong way with it. I like that idea. I think it's a little more, hate to say it, human species, but I think it's more realistic. Us as a species does not respond well to isolation and fear. We just don't.
And a lot of the greatest villains certainly come from a place of weakness, that they were as kids or whatever weaker or sicker or picked on because they were weaker. And so as soon as you get that power, all of a sudden the dynamic shifts in your favor, and you're the one who can bully people, and you often do, instead of using it for good.
And they definitely become drunk with that power. They become, I mean, the corruption of it is so immense. So I immediately, when he starts like just destroying shit, I was like, yep, that would, that makes sense. That tracks. That tracks very well to me. I still don't like Tetsuo or whatever his name is. I'm like, he's kind of an, sorry, everyone. I thought he was kind of annoying for the most part, for most of the movie. Sorry.
A lot of those villains, sniveling villains are annoying, honestly. I think it's hard to do and not be.
That was a moment, and there were several moments of the movie where I was like, ooh, I like that. That's a good choice. I get that tracks. Like, hell yeah, good job. There were also several moments I was like, all right. I guess that's what you chose to do.
One of the, I liked, one of the things I liked was the, there's kind of a, so from that point where Tetsuo starts using his powers and starts escaping the facility, it kind of just starts escalating and escalating and escalating, where he gets more and more powerful, goes to more and more places, destroys more and more things, and everybody, the government and his friends kind of chase him and try to stop him.
Yeah.
But in between that, there is also interesting continuations of the story that I was interested in before, which is the colonel talking about why they have this like program, what their goals are. There was an interesting part where he's talking to, it's talking to like the main president or mayor or main guy, and they're talking about how these since World War III happened, people had that event, and that explosion we saw at the beginning of the movie was very significant, and it kind of unites all those people. It's like a big event that everybody shares, and they need to rebuild. And so they've been rebuilding for 31 years, I think, and they've kind of started falling off and getting content with their living and living in this kind of, a lot of people are still living in this trash heap. Like they're not. So their goal, the government's goal, or at least this one colonel's goal, seems to be motivating people towards doing, like, towards continued progress. A lot of the Akira program seems to be, and we'll get to it in a second, the Kai describes it as like knowledge, like all of this collected knowledge put together. But I think the government sees it more as like just a thing that is helping all of these people move together. There is technology and information and knowledge involved, but they want to use it to encourage society to continue to evolve and grow. And we're in the future. Like, obviously technology has improved a lot, but they don't want people to just kind of stop, even though they've gotten back to a functioning Tokyo that isn't decimated by an atomic explosion kind of thing.
Yeah, there's, the story gets so, in my notes, we've already kind of touched on all of it, kind of the escalation of the film. If like, if you had a scale, we'll do the 0 to 10, like most people do, you know, how quick does this movie escalate into just insanity? It's like, it goes from like a 5-6 range to like 100.
Yeah.
In a very like compacted time period. It spends the first hour and a half, and it's a 2-hour film, a little over 2 hours of like just odd setup, odd like what, how did we get here? Like I said, you know, wait a minute, I thought, like, where are we going with this? And all of a sudden you're like, what?
Yeah, there's a lot of that setup is just like, oh, here's a weird thing. This is relatively normal biker gang stuff. Here's a mutant kid. Here's a conversation that someone's having inside their mind. Some psychic things going on. Here's and then it just starts. He can all of a sudden like fly. He can blow up stuff with his mind. He can fight all of these guys. He gets his arm cut off.
Okay.
as soon as there's a big fight. And he he's destroying everything with his mind, which is pretty cool. I like that.
It does look cool.
Canada is trying to stop him while also appealing to him being a friend, but also at the same time, he was never that good of a friend. He always treated him kind of annoying. He's like, hey, get off my bike, douchebag, kind of thing. there's not a deep connection where he can really totally connect with this guy who's going crazy with power. And so he's kind of just amping up, and he ends up losing his arm, which is pretty cool and pretty gross. Although I really liked it when he ended up forming his own metal replacement arm, which has like a metal skeleton, exoskeleton kind of thing. And then ends up like fighting that, has like this, it's also cool that when he decided to go full villain, he put on like this giant red cape. He's like, I'm just leaning into it. Let's just go.
We're here. I guess this is what we're doing now. Yeah. I keep hitting my mic. Sorry.
He's like, let's just put on a cape. Let's do it. And so that's pretty cool. Pretty baller move. But the up until that point, I was there. I was like, this is relatively normal. I'm actually keeping up now. Before, I didn't really know what was going on with all the psychic stuff and the mutant kids. But now that kind of makes sense. They're the kids. They're experiments. They have numbers. They're being used by the government to do these things. He's another experiment that has another number that they were giving these pills to kind of like repress. And then he ends up going super mutant. Like I don't even know how to describe it. He has all this like fleshy mass that like comes out of his metal arm, regrows kind of his skin around it, has different tentacle-iness. It's a very like Japanese thing to have tentacles.
He basically becomes this giant flesh and machinery blob that kind of is just
a living tumor kind of thing.
Yeah, that is all consuming. And massive, and he's like screaming in pain all of a sudden, and Canada is like,
and not really in control of it, it seems like, where he's like, oh, I actually didn't want this, I didn't mean for it to go this far. And so he's now kind of a piece of this bigger monster that's controlling him almost.
And then so at this point my brain was just like, holy shit. Right. Yeah. Like, but I do very much enjoy a lot of the whole final act of the film. I do enjoy a lot of the insanity, how fast it escalates, even the weird tumory flesh machinery blob that he becomes. I was like, this is so fucking weird, but I'm okay. We're here. I'm digging it. And then like, this is Akira. And I was like, what?
Well, initial reveal of Akira was interesting, where it's like, here's this giant ball. So the Tetsuo's been trying to get to Akira, which is like buried underground, some government secret facility. He ends up getting to it and exposing it. It's this giant ball. Over the course of the fight, it starts coming apart, and you get down into the middle of it, and there's this littler ball, like this sphere. They open it up, and it has all these like frozen cylinders.
Fucking test tubes. They're fucking test tubes.
And then they start kind of describing what's going on, that we had this person, Akira, who they used, and they couldn't really get everything out of, so they saved for the future. They froze him with all these little pieces.
Yeah, they've like dissected him and separated him.
Yeah. And so he's been frozen for the future, to be used in the future if we ever need to get back to these experiments with better technology. And that part I was cool with. Yeah, totally. Right there with you. And then this like figure, vision, new psychic specter comes through the mist. And it's this naked little boy who looks a lot like Canada. He's like the same haircut as Canada. And so I was a little confused at that. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure this is a new kid, Akira.
That's not Canada. Not Canada.
Not Canada. Also, the girl, Kai, has the same haircut as Akira. And they talk to each other. It's weird at first. But this new kid is like talking to these mutant kids. And he doesn't look like a grotesque, wrinkly, shriveled prune person. He looks like a normal... He looks like Canada. He looks like a normal kid, although he's naked like and small.
He's like an angelic version of Canada. Because when he's revealed, he's got like the giant beam of light behind him. They put him in that like Jesus pose almost, where he's like, oh, he's the one. He's the, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, wait.
Yeah, and so Akira is embodied in physical form. He's back, kind of, even though his test tubes and everything are still there. And so I didn't really know what was going on with that. But the extra weird part is it didn't seem like he did much after he came back. Like, I'm not sure what the ultimate point of that was, because Tetsuo still does his whole thing. Canada kind of fights him. They have I think that happens after the point where Tetsuo went to space. So,
oh yeah. So it goes to space.
The government has been trying to stop him. They've been throwing every weapon they have at Tetsuo, the mutant monster Superman character. Tanks, no match for him. Dudes with bazookas and laser rifles, no match for him. And so they end up trying to position this like orbital satellite to fire down laser nukes or whatever at him. That doesn't work. He ends up flying up into space and taking control of those satellites, fly and shooting back at the Earth and destroying all this other shit. And I was like, it was an interesting, like, I guess, example of how, and I think that was kind of the overall message I took from the whole movie, which was, these government and these people try to form these super weapons and superhumans and all these things, even potentially with the best of intentions. But all it takes is one person you didn't anticipate, like this character, Tetsuo, taking control of it and using it against you, and now the entire country is fucked, and it's your fault for coming up with this super weapon, and even something like a satellite, he's just using it against and blowing up all this stuff.
I gave the movie a lot of credit when he goes to space, because they cut out all sound. And I get a big kick when movies that take place in space do that, because there's like no sound in space. So I was very happy when that happened. I was like, yeah, this is great. He's going to tear it apart. They're trying to go accurate. Of course, then there's fire in space and the sound comes back pretty quick. And I was like, oh, you were so close, but I still give him credit, because that was effective to me. Mm-hmm. Going from the mayhem, and it's a pretty it's a loud whole altercation in Tokyo, so to go to have that contrast where it's super loud, chaotic, to just silent, I loved that. I thought that was so cool, editing sound wise and all that. Him turning the weapon on to Tokyo was a little like, god. It's like these artists are constantly trying to tell audiences or people in general, like, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
It's true.
You have a good intention. What are the consequences again?
Yep.
Exactly. But that's for a different rant later on.
So Tetsuo has this robotic arm, and he becomes this giant fleshy tumory monster that kind of grows and grows and takes him over. I think that's why I associate it with him, with a tumor mostly. It takes him over, and that part, it started getting weirder from there, I think, where there's a giant flesh monster tumor that takes him over there. You may be able to explain this to me. Maybe not. Maybe we need a listener to call in and tell us what the fuck went on with there's like a singularity thing that happens where everything blows up and shrinks into this ball of light. There's like a tiny ball of light at like an anatomical level, but it seems, I don't know. It's a weird way to, technically, I guess, unrelated from Tetsuo's monster, unless it is Akira doing that to fight this being, I guess, which is like this super being, and it's the only solution for him to consume it.
That was how I took it. I took it as this is the tool, the way to take back control, to kind of dismantle the threat, was that time. I could be wrong, but yeah, I'm with you. Hey, diehard fans of Akira, let us know.
and but right before that happens, the colonel who we skipped over the part where he created a coup d'etat in the government. So there is like this round table of people who kind of united against him. They're like, hey, the military, which he's kind of representing, all of us as the rest of the council are against you. And so he ends up kind of letting the military take over the government in this coup d'etat that happens. And he also kind of accomplishes his goal of reconnecting with Tetsuo, bringing him back into the fold. And he's like, hey, buddy, you need anything? Can we get you healed up? Can we get your arm? All this stuff. And ends up not working out, obviously. But I was not terribly confused, but the more I think about it now, I think I'm more confused than I thought I was watching it, where I was just like, letting things happen and assuming it would come out later on. Trying to remember, I do need to watch it again, I think, is the main takeaway, where I'm like, I got it. I think I got a lot of it, and I got the overall, I took away a overall message. I don't know if it was the right one, but I took away the one I wanted to, which was mostly that government is bad and these freedom fighters are good.
And once again, we're on the watch list. Sorry.
But so yeah, so from a perspective of a super villain rising to power, taking over this, basically taking over this country, has complete control, is unstoppable. I did think it was an interesting progression and an interesting story. All of the like little kid parts, I thought it was interesting having them as like these test subjects who are like they're connected to Tetsuo in this way where they are kind of going through the same thing.
Yeah, it's like a telepathic and physical connection because they are all subjects for this military testing program, whatever. Yeah. I thought that was interesting.
Do you think that they were disgusting looking, like ghoulish monsters because they were actually older than they are and they were kind of like part of the system or process made them continue to be small even though have like these powers developing and all this stuff? Or do you think that, why do you think they looked so gross?
I kind of think that their powers kind of changed them. That was kind of like with Tetsuo, that's kind of how I took them, was they've been compromised. Their physical, mental beings have been compromised being in the this environment. And I think that took a toll on the physical body. Yeah. So that was how I took that. And then with Tetsuo like becoming all consumed, I kind of like, to me, was okay. So it affects people a little bit differently because, you know, one of the kids has to stay in like that floaty chair thing that he flies around. The girl is typically laying in the bed for a lot of the time.
And in like the glass case, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel like their powers come with a curse, and the curse just happened to be it like turned their body, their physical form, kind of more grotesque or ghouly.
Yeah.
And I think with Tetsuo, because it affected him on such a grander scale, was because of the potency or the direct effect to giving him these powers and having them suddenly like completely take over. So yeah. I took that as their physical appearance is a direct consequence to their superpowers. So, okay. Which I kind of like. I like that idea. I think that's kind of an interesting interesting idea for superpowered humans, especially like in these stories. What would it possibly or potentially could it do to the physical body over time? And you don't know how long those three have actually been in this program. They don't actually like go into detail about it. So,
yeah, I like that too. I tend to agree with you. I thought it was interesting how Tetsuo, he initially, he's given like these pills by this doctor or scientist or whatever. And it seems like over time that they're trying to repress this thing that's inside him, because they mention without those pills or over time, he may experience the full power of what's inside him.
Yeah.
It could certainly kill him or maybe even destroy the city or something like that. So I certainly thought that was interesting. The main thing that I thought would be more significant was the whole conversation with Kai and Kanda in prison, I believe is where they were talking about it. And she has like a monologue about Akira and how it is this knowledge that people have collected over time. It's a tons of energy and all this stuff. And it's, she says something like, it's in every person, like this power is inside of everybody. And I honestly thought that that was going to be more significant. I was like, oh, this is why you see Canada on the poster of everything, because he's the hero. He's going to tap into this power. They're going to have like a super-powered fight where it's like Tetsuo versus Canada. And that never happened. And I was a little disappointed by that.
Yeah. I thought there would be a little bit more with Canada versus Tetsuo. There really wasn't. I was kind of disappointed in their full-on final altercation.
He still fights him. He still rides the bike some. He rides it, and he has a laser rifle. But yeah, he never really – there's never like a mano a mano fight kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So – I mean, like, I'm trying to remember how the ball of light goes down, and there's not much after the ball of light.
Not really. It seems
like.
Am
I missing something? I feel like I'm missing something. What am I missing?
That's basically the end. I did want to check in with you, though, and make sure you understood it how I understood it, where it seemed like from the very beginning of the movie, when we saw the nuke go off in old Tokyo in 88, that must have been from the Akira experiment, not from some atomic bomb that the United States dropped.
Actually, I thought, because they set it up where you expect the opening to be like World War III. That's, you know, once again, like you said, Japan's getting hit with the nuke. But yeah, by the end,
they don't say anything about what World War III was about. They show the nuke, and then they say 2019, 31 years later, where it's 31 years after the end of World War
III. Yeah, and they mention World War III like once or twice, but it's very brief. It's very like just glossed over. So by the end of the movie, I did not take the opening as World War III. I took that as, oh, this was like a first. It was a cataclysmic episode, and I kind of wonder if. And maybe this is more in the manga or lore. I'm sure there's so much lore to this. This story, the Akira character program, whatever, I feel like this is the kind of thing that would create lore.
Tons of fan fiction, too.
Yes, so I'm curious if there is, but I took, by the time Akira ended, my thought on the opening was actually, oh, so they've experienced a Tetsuo event before, and it was 31 years ago, and they've been trying to perfect it since then, or at least try to like manage better with it, and in, they don't because they don't actually learn from their mistakes. Shocker.
It's almost like history repeats itself.
It's amazing when you choose to not try to improve it, but to keep repeating it. What?
Yeah, exactly.
So that was how I interpreted the opening and the ending once I finished the film was, oh, they've experienced this before. They just don't ever really talk about it. It's just kind of, that's the setup.
Yeah.
So,
and may have even caused it before and covered up the true meaning of it, maybe, or cause of it, and ended up right back in the same place again.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because Tetsuo, when he turns their weapon onto the city, I mean, he's destroying tons of stuff. So,
yeah,
that was my interpretation. By the time those credits rolled, was like, oh, okay, so World War III is actually not. I almost wonder if World War III was an actual thing or if it was a direct result to Akira.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly could be that Japan's development of Akira, the initial kid or initial program or whatever, was like a super weapon that caused a power struggle in the rest of the world that may have led to World War III, or did lead to World War III, and maybe the rest of the world knew we're trying to get this thing. But it's never really described why that ended and why Neo Tokyo is relatively normal again, even though they still have this super weapon. So it's, that part's kind of weird. But yeah, that's basically the end of the movie. The only other weird thing is that giant ball of light and that singularity I mentioned. They talk about how it's the creation of a new universe or something, or the birth of a universe.
I'm not going to lie. Like when they started talking about the birth of, I think that's actually a direct quote, dude. I think they do call it like, this is the birth of a new universe. My brain was like, okay.
I'm too dumb to understand this.
Come on, guys. Like, another subplot? Is there a sequel? Nope. Okay. Yeah. I didn't hate that they were talking about it's another universe, because, you know, that's been a favored theory for so long, and the idea of like your fingernails could have universes on them, and there's infinite amounts everywhere. So they give Tetsuo kind of his own to, I guess, be. Can't imagine it's a very happy, pleasant one, but
yeah, it's kind of a dick, honestly.
Yeah, right. Don't go that one. That one's bad. when the credits rolled, I just kind of like sat there for a second, just trying to figure out like, how do I even organize my thoughts on this movie? I didn't do a good job doing that, because I just there's a lot to it.
There is a lot to it. I think we can boil it down to key takeaways, though. Did you like it? Yes or no?
So before I get to whether I liked it or not, I feel like we'll do the...
I thought that was going to be so simple.
Hell no. We're talking to Kira. No. I'm trying to keep with the trend.
More complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah. Just a couple fun little tidbit notes that I did jot down. Because I do like it when movies end up being so influential. And Akira has kind of proven to be very influential. There were action sequences in it that I felt were very familiar. Like I said, with not just the bike, but just the way that they approach the action sequences, or like the shots of it, the blocking of it. It did feel like, I think this movie may have influenced more than just other animated shows. I kind of get a sense like it had to have had a big influence on mainstream action films in the U.S.
Hollywood.
Yeah. You brought up Blade Runner. Now the timing doesn't work with Blade Runner.
Yeah.
But I also had that vibe of like, this feels kind of in that vein. Like I could see Akira almost existing in the Blade Runner universe.
Yeah.
Almost, just with the feel that they had of it, and obviously other side of the world. Anyways, it is credited as being the film that broke anime into the mainstream Western audiences. So into America, it made anime mainstream, which having that familiarity with some of the sequences made sense to me.
Yeah.
Because when things go mainstream, it becomes very influential. It becomes like the studio see something and go, well, we need to tap into that, and we're gonna follow that. So I didn't get around to it, but I do want to look into what other films besides just like animated shows in the 90s has Akira kind of been a direct influence on, whether it was storytelling, blocking, action sequence. That was interested to me.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I think that as someone who's never been interested in anime before,
Here's
one of the only movies that I've heard of and had a basic interest in seeing. And so I totally get that it would be responsible for America becoming interested in anime.
Right. And then the other little tidbit, because there's been like this ongoing trend for quite a while now of anime films or anime shows, manga or manga. Hold on. Child, How do you actually print? Is it manga or is it manga or? Okay, it's manga. I got a very sarcastic response to that. Yeah. My bad. Of trying to turn this stuff into like a live action series or movie. A lot of the times it kind of fails. It is not widely loved. But Sony did apparently want to turn this into a live action film. Mm-hmm. And they opted out of it, not because of fan backlash or anything like that, but it boiled down to money. The projected budget to turn this film into a live action movie was around $300 million.
Oh, wow.
That is so much money for you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, kind of. I'm thinking of, I guess, bigger budget things.
Well, but you got to, that note. Million. That note was from like late 90s, early 2000s. So
how it's going to be double that now for inflation.
Right. So you got to kind of like put that dollar sign into context. But just a couple interesting footnotes on it. I thought like, all right, so did I like the movie?
Yeah.
You go first.
I liked it more than I thought I would. I will definitely watch it again. And it, I think, did a decent job of making me not... If I didn't like Akira, I probably would have written off anime entirely.
Yeah.
Because I liked Akira enough, I would be open to watching other anime things that I have heard would be good.
There you go.
So I would say it did a good job of opening up my horizons. I think that I was interested. I was not bored, which is a great start. And so I was definitely interested in it. And I would want to watch it again. I could see, as I understand it more, I could see myself liking it more. It is deep. Like, I get the impression that it's deep. So I could see myself liking it more as I understand it more for that reason, I think. Yeah.
Six to Midnight, what do you...
Ooh, you're going to put me on the actual Movie Boners rating system.
I mean, we might as well. We might as well. People wanted us to talk about it, want to hear how we feel.
I wouldn't say I loved it, if we're being honest with each other. I would give it, if I was rating it on a scale from 6 to Midnight, I would say this area, 2 o'clock. Ish.
You're always going like.
I think my picture is mirrored. You're always
going
you,
on so like the down.
10 o'clock. I'm around 10 o'clock.
You always start full salute, and you're like, how bad?
Well, I'm around 10 o'clock.
We always do that opposite because I always start from like 6.
Yeah.
And go up. You always start from noon and go down. I think that's kind true. Of funny that we do that. So I'm kind of with you. I did not love it. Yeah. I liked it enough. I didn't feel bored. I was like watching it. I did have one moment where I was like, okay, I need to pause the film because I was watching the Japanese version with the English subtitles. So if I had to get up from it, I needed to make sure I paused it because I was not going to catch the dialogue.
Yeah.
And at one point I did pause it to like start making lunch and I paused it and the movie was like 30 minutes into it. And it felt like I had already been watching it for like an hour or more. And that to me was like, oh my God, this is going to be a long movie. It did not feel that long once it finally ended. It did like pick up. I did feel like, okay, here we go. Mm-hmm.
The last act goes very fast.
It does go really fast. Will I watch it again? Yeah, because I get frustrated when I watch a movie that I like enough where I'm like, I feel like I missed a lot of stuff. That kind of gets to me a little bit where I feel obligated. Like I'm watching it again. So that I need to understand it. Yeah. So I am going to watch it again. I agree with you. I think my opinions may increase the more I watch it, the more I I guess, catch on to more of the little things or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But if I'm super honest,
be honest.
I'm always pretty honest. You said you're like in this range, right? Like the, what'd you say? 2 or 10, depending on the scale, what side of the clock you're looking.
Correct.
I'm kind of more like in the 7 o'clock range.
Okay. That's low.
Yeah.
That's almost 6.
That's almost 6.
Fully.
It was entertaining enough in part 2, the insanity that partakes.
Do you see what's happening here?
No, I don't, but I can hear it.
He's walking around with a beer can in his mouth. My dog is just carrying it and dropping it.
Dropping it. Yeah. He's just like,
I turn my head and I'm like, what are you doing with that? It's full. That's a full beer can, by the way.
Nice. Nice. He looks so proud right now.
He is. It's like, I was doing it for attention.
And he's getting it.
Yeah.
I'd say 7. Yeah, somewhere between 7 and 8. I'll give it that, because the last half I was definitely very invested in.
Yeah.
Because of the insanity, I do like that. Like from the milk and the giant teddy bear on.
Yeah.
As much as my brain was like, "What in the shit nuggets are we watching?"
Yeah.
I was still like, "This is up my alley," ish. Mm-hmm. But yet,
yeah.
Sorry, diehard fans. I just didn't do it for me. I actually think so. I have watched like Spirited Away. Okay. I've watched Howl's Moving Castle, and then a couple shows like the. I watched the Death Note show, and I watched something else. I can't remember.
What's the one with like the fleshy human, muscly human people? Monsters. That's the only other anime I've heard of.
Titans? It's something,
yeah, Titans. Attack on Titan.
Yeah. I tried watching that and didn't get into that one.
Okay.
There's just something when I try to watch anime, there's just something by the time I get through it, if I can get through it, where I'm just like, it's just not for me.
Yeah.
I just don't connect to it. I have no issues if someone else connects to it. That's cool if that's your shtick.
Right.
Obviously, getting myself to invest into the fandom just for my daughter and just to be able to share another added piece of art with her, I'm positive my opinions will shift. I'm positive they will change. I could see Akira end up being one of those movies where, like, the more I watch it, the more I start loving it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I felt kind of like, I'm trying to be honest, I just did not think it was that spectacular.
I think that's totally fair. And I generally agree with you. I don't think it was spectacular. I put it in kind of the medium average range. I think we've described this in the past, tend to, at minimum, appreciate influential things that have come before, that has created or influenced things that we do love a lot that probably wouldn't have existed or been the same without this weird thing we don't really care for that came before. So I was just looking at the Wikipedia page for Akira, and it's talking about like cultural impact, and it's listing all these things about how it is credited for influencing Blade Runner and cyberpunk in general, which I love the cyberpunk style of things. Things like Kanye West has cited as a major influence in his work, and Stranger Things and Bullet Time Effect in the Matrix films. So all of these different things, I'm like, yeah, good, 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 great stuff that may have been totally different or not existed at all without
Akira. Yeah, no, I'm going to give it full respect for the influence it has obviously had. And I said it earlier, I wanted to look into a list of what I feel like this film has influenced a lot of shit that I love. You mentioned The Matrix, and immediately, as soon as you were like, bullet time and Matrix, like, oh my God, that makes sense. So immediately just with that,
yeah,
I want to watch it again just so I can like watch it for the respect. I kind of feel like it might end up becoming how I view black and white films. Like I said, mm-hmm. in our black and white episode, where I find it important as a fan of this art medium to watch and appreciate where it came from, right. to watch the early stuff so that I can appreciate the current stuff more. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Akira is probably set to become that for me, which will mm-hmm. end up obviously shifting my scale significantly. But yeah, first impression.
Just okay. Just,
yeah, it was like, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
I didn't hate totally it, though. Fair. I did not hate it, though. And I feel that's a win considering it's anime. And for those that know me well enough, besides like you and Christy, will know me saying, mm-hmm. oh, I didn't hate it. When it comes mm-hmm. to anime, that's like, good on ya. Like, yeah. my daughter would be proud of me for saying that. So,
yeah. Yeah, and just the fact that we both want to watch it again, or are at least willing to watch it again. I don't do that with movies that I don't care for.
Yeah, why would I like, bother? If I hate a movie, I really don't want to watch it again.
Yeah.
Like, really, ever. I'm looking at you, Avatar.
Shots fired.
And your stupid sequels.
All like 12 of them or whatever it is.
If they ever actually get made, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's our take on Akira. That might be our shortest deep dive episode. I don't know if that's telling.
yeah, probably. I mean, we didn't go beat by beat, but
no, we didn't.
I think that we covered all the major topics. Yeah, I would say I'm sure there are things that we missed or didn't get or got wrong that you could change our perspective on. So if we said anything stupid, let us know. You can even call into the show and leave a voicemail and we'll play it in the next episode.
Where that includes like the actual pronunciation of their names.
Yep. Feel free to correct us. I will go to the grave wishing it was Canada, but I know that it's not.
Yep.
I just found it funnier.
Yep.
So yeah, call in, leave us a voicemail if you have any input or that you would like to share, and we are happy to hear it. Otherwise, you can DM us on Facebook and Instagram or leave comments. We'll be posting about Akira this week for sure.
Yeah.
And probably anime in general. So comment, DM us at Facebook and Instagram or on Facebook and Instagram at Movie Boners. And that's about it.
That's it.
Next week.
Before we tease next week, I also want to add to that. Tell us why you loved Akira so much. Like, not in a like mean way. Like, genuinely, if you're a fan, and clearly you guys are, let us know what about it struck you. I love hearing those stories. I mean, that's a big part of our show, is why certain movies stick with us. I want to hear that.
There's definitely a thing where I am most interested in things that other people are passionate about. And so their passion can rub off on me for sure, where I'm like, oh, I get it now kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you love it, I want to know exactly what it is about it that connects with you, or maybe it's just a style aesthetic thing, or maybe it's something deeper. I'm curious. Very curious.
Yeah. And then to tease next week, I am very excited for next week, even though the majority of the movies we're going to watch are not that great. I am very excited for it.
Mm-hmm. So we're coming up on Halloween, and we thought, what better way to watch Halloween? All of Halloween.
So we're going to celebrate my favorite dude in the horror film universe.
Justin's favorite slasher villain.
Michael Myers. Just so awesome, even though a lot of his movies are not, but they're entertaining enough. So we're going to watch them all.
He's not even in all of them, at least number three.
Right. But if you listen to I think it was either Guilty Pleasure or just our basic fun, spooky movies to watch during Halloween. It was one of those episodes.
Yeah.
You will hear my defense for Halloween 3, which I will also be repeating when we talk about it next week. But yes,
yeah.
Next week we'll also include Halloween Kills, which just came out. So go watch it. I'm curious to hear everyone's opinion on it. And I know you and your wife are curious to hear mine.
We tried to get a sneak peek because we just watched it last night. And my wife, Christy, was texting you, trying to get it out of you. And you were very much, I'm not spoiling the beans until we record it. I'll do it live kind of thing.
Yep. Yep.
But I'm very curious. It'll be kind of like last week's James Bond episode where the most recent movie we talked about just came out.
And we're right.
talk about it and spoiler it. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah. So go watch the Halloween franchise. There's what, 11 of them?
I believe so.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
Keep a lookout for Paul Rudd, a very young Paul Rudd. He pops up in one of them.
I can't wait for that. I haven't seen that one yet.
No. Oh man, have you not watched like the whole franchise before?
I don't think so. I know I've watched. I have all of them, but I don't. I think I've seen bits and pieces. Caught some on TV.
Okay,
and it's just been kind of sporadic. So I've never sat down and just binged the series.
Okay,
and how bizarrely like rebooty it is, and I know there's a lot going on.
There's going to be a lot of times where you're going to shake your head watching it. There's one of them where they change his mask a little bit and you're like, why does it look like that?
I can see that.
And we're obviously, because there's like 11 of them, we're obviously including the Rob Zombie remakes. Well, the remake with his sequel. That'll be an interesting one to talk about. We were both working at Sam's when that first one came out, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so next week should be a bloody fun time.
Yeah, I'm excited to get into it. We both love Halloween series. And yeah, it'll be fun to focus on this one. There's kind of a couple of massive Halloween, or not Halloween, but scary series that have just a billion or 11 at least sequels. And so it could be fun to do that every Halloween and do
I thought about that too. Like, man, we've got a lot of franchises that we could just keep going.
Yeah.
But I'm happy that we're going to start off with one of my favorites, and that's good old Michael Myers.
Yep. And with the new movie coming out, seemed appropriate. So
it does.
Check out next week. That'll be really fun.
So I think that's it.
I think so too. Thank you everybody for listening.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Have a good night or day, whatever. Bye.